जमुना तीरा बनछारी। जमुना तीरा बनछारी। जैया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जैया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जैया गोपी जन बाला गिरिभर धारी। गोपी जन बाला गिरिभर धारी। यशोदनंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यशोदनंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। जमुना तीरा बनछारी। जमुना तीरा बनछारी। जैया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जैया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जैया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत शिष्यमाधि सेवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत शिष्यमाद इज द बाइंग ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की। ग्रंथ राशिमं भागवतम की Itai Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Shri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, entitled The Behavior of a Perfect Person.
द
text number 31. Adhyatmikadibhir dukhair abhimuktasya karhichit martyasya krichopanathair artaika maikriyetakim adhyatmikadibhir dukhair abhimuktasya karhichit martasya krichropanathair artaika maikriyetakim adhyatmikadibhir dukhair abhimuktasya karhichit martyasya krichropanathair artaika maikriyetakim. Please read. Abhimuktasya karhichit martasya krichrapanathair abhimuktasya karhichit martasya krichrupanathair artaika maikriyetakim adhyatmika adhidaivika and adhibhautika dukhai, by the threefold miseries of material life, abhimuktasya, of one who is not free from such miserable conditions, or one who is subjected to birth, death, old age, and disease. Karehichit, sometimes martyasya, of the living entity subjected to death, kricha upanatai, things obtained because of severe miseries, artai, even if some benefit is derived, kamai, which can fulfill one's material desires. Kriyeta, what do they do? Kim, and what is the value of such happiness? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions: adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibhautika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One who is still subjected to birth, death, old age, disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. Purport. According to the materialistic way of life, if a poor man, after laboring very, very hard, gets some material profit at the end of his life, he is considered a success, even though he again dies while suffering the threefold miseries, adi atmika, adi daivika, and adi bhautika. No one can escape the threefold miseries of materialistic life, namely, miseries pertaining to the body and mind, miseries pertaining to the difficulties imposed by society, community, nation, and other living entities, and miseries inflicted upon us by natural disturbances from earthquakes, famines, droughts, floods, epidemics, and so on. If one works very hard, suffering the threefold miseries, and then is successful in getting some small benefit, what is the value of this benefit? Besides that, even if a karmi is successful in accumulating some material wealth, he still cannot enjoy it, for he must die in bereavement. I have even seen a dying man begging a medical attendant to increase his life by 4 years so he could complete his material plans. Of course, the medical man was unsuccessful in expanding the life of the man, who therefore died in grave bereavement. Everyone must die in this way, and after one's mental concoction is taken into account by the laws of material nature, he is given another chance to fulfill his desires in a different body. Material plans for material happiness have no value, but under the spell of the illusory energy, we consider them extremely valuable. There, where many politicians, social reformers, and philosophers who die very miserably without deriving any practical value from the material plans. Therefore, a sane and sensible man never desires to work hard under the conditions of threefold miseries, only to die in disappointment. Adhyatmika dibhir dukhair abhimuktasya karhichit martyasya kritchrpana tair artai kamai kriyeta kim. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions: adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibhautika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, disease, and the reaction of his fruitive activities. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Satanine Bancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavenyo Namo Namah. So His Grace Nityananda Prana Prabhu, he have to excuse himself today, so he requests me to do the class. So. I'm not necessarily very eager to be, you know, sitting in the Vyasa Sam, you know, in consecutive days, but we're happy to do the service. We continue this same theme or reading about the realizations of the sage that is answering the questions of Prahlad Maharaj and explaining how he have come to the point that he is at that moment, you know, of taking this behavior of a python. So he's explaining how he came to that position. And basically, yesterday we discussed that he was able to understand how the material world functions. And this is a continuation of that. And so it's a very important understanding for any living entity in this material world to come to that realization, to have that piece of knowledge. Again, yesterday we discussed that that's one of the five subject matters of the Bhagavad Gita, which is, you know, is one of the five subject matters of transcendental knowledge, Divya Gyan, to understand Prakriti, to understand how the material world works. And so it's a very somber picture, this material world. It's designed to be a place that there is no happiness. It's just designed to be like that. Krishna explains in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he described this world as Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. So it's a place of misery. It's designed for that. And it's temporary. So these two things is the environment in which a living entity is trying to function. And basically everything is against the nature of the living entity when we're placing in this material world. And therefore, existence in the material world is considered a struggle for existence. A struggle means that you really have to fight. You really have to make an effort to, you know, counteract so many things that are against it. That's what a struggle. If these things doesn't exist, if it was not a place that it was all against you, against your nature, then there will be no struggle. It will be something some natural, easy, you know, like that. But it's a struggle because everything is against our nature. The nature of the living entity is eternity and bliss and knowledge. So this is a place in which the government features is Asashvatan and is Dukkhalayam. So there's no Ananda, it's Dukkha. There's no eternity, it's temporary. And to be able to function, to be able to maintain yourself in this condition that is completely unnatural, it requires that you are covered by ignorance. There's no knowledge. It's the only way we can actually be, you know, maintaining ourselves in this situation. Our knowledge is covered by ignorance. So the manifestation of this world of Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam in the living entity the miserable condition, the condition, the things that we have to struggle against is called these threefold miseries. That's how, again, it's designed. It's designed with these threefold miseries that are this environment in which you're going to function. So there's this element of your own body. It will be the cause of so much struggles against you, miseries that are going to come out of this body. Both, you know, in the subtle and in the gross. The subtle body will cause you some miseries. The gross body will cause you some miseries. And you can't avoid it. It's going to be there. And then there's the miseries caused by the other living entities that are there. Because everybody's struggling to actually to function in this world. So meaning struggling means there's a competition. There's resources, and the resources have so many living entities, you know, trying to compete to actually being able to, you know, get their, you know, sort of share. So there is competition, means there's going to be some miseries caused. Because I want this, but someone else wants it too. And if you get distracted, you know, then it's a creature that wants it too, you know. So these things are there. All the nations, you know, people are complaining that, you know, the resources of certain places, say for example, there is so much problems in the world that causes all kinds of wars that are based, you know, on some people say that is the oil politics that causes so much problems in the world, especially in the Middle East, you know, with the Western world. Anyway, a big mess. And so nations becomes, you know, against each other. So that struggle is there. And then there is a misery is caused by just the material world that by, you know, the forces of nature, the demigods, and manifests in the form of earthquakes, tornadoes, natural disasters like that. So that's the environment in which we're placed, that we have to function, that it have these threefold miseries that are embedded in. So you have to deal with that as you enter in this very antagonistic environment. And then there is this element of asashvatan that is temporary. So the temporary nature also creates, you know, this gigantic obstacle that the living entity have to, or not obstacle, problem that the living entity have to be deal with, that is completely unnatural to. And the way it manifests, the immediate thing that it manifests for it is that everything has a time limit, how you say, like a time factor. So there is it manifests in this birth, death, old age, and disease. Janma, Mrityu, Jara, and Vyadhi. Krishna explains that in the, what is it, 13th chapter. Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadhi. What is it? Dukhai, Doshani, darshana, dukkha toshani darshana. That you have to deal with this, you know, four problems. Every living entity have to deal with these four problems, that it's just, you can't relate to it. You can relate to birth and death. And what to speak of growing old and your body deteriorating and getting disease. So those are things that are embedded too. And that is the feature of time, of this Ashashvatam feature that, you know, actually forces the living entity to have to go through these problems. Birth, death, old age, and disease. And everything in the material world has, you know, is more or less governed by these principles. In not living, you know, just in material things, they manifest at one point, they remain, they start to dwindle, and they disappear. So the same principles are there, you know. So we're in this environment that is completely against us. So there's no chance of happiness. That's the material world. And then we have to act in the material. When we come to this material world and we make a choice, Prabhupada explains in the previous purport that once you get this human body, you have the capacity to choose what plan you're going to follow. If you choose to follow the plan of enjoying in the material world, then you're giving a body, and according to the activities that you did before, you receive a body that have a particular tendency, that is influenced by a particular mode of nature. We have this yesterday we spoke about the three modes of material nature that forces the living entity to act in certain way. Actually, the modes of nature are the ones who are acting. You just simply have to go for the ride. It's like a virtual reality. So, you know, people right now play video games and they get into this virtual reality that, you know, they're basically forced. You know, when we did our we had a preaching center, and there were some devotees who were, you know, students who were living in the preaching center. And, you know, nice devotees, but they had, you know, a particular thing that they really liked to do and they couldn't give up. So they would get together to play video games. Anyway, so they have this very complicated thing that they, you know, each one has their computer. They, you know, sit in their rooms, and then from their computers they play the game, which was a war game. Yeah, so we're supposed to, you know, you have two teams, you know, like two opposite, you know, armies, and they're supposed to kill each other. Nice brahmachari game. It was, there was no brahmachari proper programming there. You can understand how the thing declined in 2 years. You know? Anyway, so there's these guys, you know, and the characters, they have a big gun, they're big guys, you know, boom, 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 and then they kill each other. So then there's a living entity there, you know, they're forced to act like those characters. It's not, you know, that all of a sudden, you know, because, oh, I'm a devotee, you know, I don't, you know, you shall not kill, or, you know, we're peaceful, Shanta, then, you know, no, I'm not going to shoot this person. you know, so I'm just going to give him a flower. No, there's no such a thing. There's not a choice for flower in that, you know, in those characters of the video game. There's a choose for different weapons, but there's no such a thing of a flower or a golojamen or something like that. You know, they have to choose a weapon. So they're forced to be a certain way. So that's like the most of nature. We've been given a body and we're forced to act in a certain way. You know, sometimes you see people, you know, say when you go to a, people, according to the type of mode of nature that they associate with, they act certain way. They will act certain way. It's expected to act in certain way. Like, you know, you can imagine someone in the mode of passion, you know, when you suppose you come to a hotel, and as you come to the hotel, you sit in the bed and you see that huge TV there just looking at you. And then, you know, next to the thing, you see, oh, there's a whole list of things that you can choose, you know, to see. They have all kinds of, you know, channels. So, you know, if you have this truck driver, you know, not our devoted truck drivers, they're very beautiful devotees, you know, here, but suppose this big, you know, guy, and he sits in his bed. You think he's going to choose, you know, the Nickelodeon or whatever, the children channel, or they're going to choose PBS, you know, the public channel to see some educational program. I mean, probably if you put some channel like that, the guy just go like, what he would choose? He would probably choose, you know, the fighting sport, or, you know, it would be natural. You naturally go to those things, you know, according to the mode of nature. So the modes of nature force you to act in certain ways. It, just like you see it very graphic, like graphically in animals, but you also see it in human beings. You don't see a cow just, you know, jumping into a deer and it's starting to tear the flesh apart. They don't act like that. Or you don't see a tiger just, you know, like sort of, you know, chewing on some grass, you know, very peacefully, as, you know, people just come and see them, you know, like that. And then, you know, lick at your hand, you know, like you don't see that. They won't act like that. They're forced to act in a certain way. So those are the modes of nature. They force us to act. And when you act, then what happens, that they creates a whole change of reactions and actions that sort of brings us more and more entangled in this antagonistic space that is basically a place of suffering and a struggle. So a sober person is able to see these things, is able to understand these things. When you come to the position of being able to understand that, this doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to actually go on and on and on in this cycle. That, you know, what is the benefit? Like, in reality, there is no happiness. And this is what the sage is explaining to Prahlad Maharaj. You know, he observed that happiness, family happiness, the happiness of the union between man and woman, he said before, is actually the result of that. In reality, materially, both ends, you know, will be unhappy. So he analyzed the whole thing. The whole scheme that we actually consider as reality in this material world, we work hard, you know, like we discussed yesterday, we work hard to achieve happiness. You know, the sage, a person who is, you know, a sober person, will understand that it's like my Guru Maharaj said, I mentioned yesterday, that is an abject futility to try to be happy in this material world. It's an abject futility. So when you come to that conclusion, then you actually start to look to something else. And then from within the heart, Krishna will start to guide us, depending on how sincere you are, to that solution. There's another thing that we have to delve with in this material consciousness, so this attempt to be happy in this material world, and is that coming into contact with the material energy and having and making our plans to fully try to, you know, pursue this happiness through material sense gratification to this material world, then we have to deal also with another formidable obstacles, which comes actually of the symptoms that pursuance does into our character. And they are also pretty much embedded, you know, into the materialistic concept of life. These six obstacles are called kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, and what is the next one? Matsarya. So these six character traits just basically engulf the living entity, and it manifests, you know, from a very gross to a very subtle, but they're there all throughout, you know, unless you become free from this material consciousness of life, then you're affected by these things, which is also, you know, pretty scary and terrible, because one may think, well, you know, there are people in the mode of goodness, and, you know, they have very good qualities, but they also have these things embedded in their character. Because unless you become free from this material bodily conception of life, these things are going to be in different gradations there. So kama means the desires, material desires, desires to enjoy the matter. And this desire to enjoy matter then can lead to two things, either to krodha or to lobha. So if those material desires are not fulfilled, then you develop krodha, which is anger. And if they're fulfilled, then you develop lobha, which is greed. So somehow or other, it's such an entangled, you know, force that these material desires, you know, is how you say, is a catch-22, no? There's that phrase that, you know, it doesn't matter if you go this way or if you go that way, you're born. You know, you're going to be born. So either you're going to be very angry, or you're going to find yourself that it's not going to be enough, that you want more. you know, that is never enough. That when I get to fulfill that, then I want more and want more and want more, maybe something else and like that. So greed or krodha. And then when any of those two kick in, then you become, then it comes moha. It's, you become delusion. You become delusion to actually, you don't see things as they are. You know, either way, you don't see things as they are. You start to rationalize and see the world in certain way that actually is able to ration, to make sense of following that path. So you become delusion, and then with delusion, then comes this moha, and then mada. Mada is sounds like, you know, it's like madness, but in reality it's translated as pride. Pride. And so from this delusion that comes out of anger and greed, then you see that there's certain pride, you know, in a person who is greedy, the pride is, you know, I'm very successful in satisfying my material desires. So, you know, I'm better. I'm, you know, like that. And in a person who is an angry person, this pride is like, you know, I'm going to, you know, finish my enemies, you know, like that. I'm going to, you know, I'm strong, and I'm, you know, I'm gonna squash whoever, you know, comes in my way. And from mada, then you come to this matsarya, which is envy. You know, you don't want someone to surpass you either way. So, you know, these things are embedded also in this materialist, when you are entangled in this material, you know, creation thing, this material plan, this material, this pursuit to happiness in the material world. So a sober person comes to this conclusion. This is not good. And yesterday we read Arjuna's questions in the 14th chapter. In the second chapter, he also gives a series of questions. You remember, the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is the contents of the Bhagavad Gita summarized. So everything is there, and Arjuna asked these questions when Krishna is explaining about the person in transcendental consciousness, which is also, you know, parallel to this session that we're reading in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The word that Krishna uses is sthita pragya, a sage whose mind and whose consciousness is fixed, sthita pragya, and who is situated in transcendental consciousness. And Arjuna asks, he has four questions. This is in text number, chapter 2, text number 54. He asks, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of those who are, whose consciousness is thus merged into in transcendence? First question. Second, how does he speak? And what is his language? Third, how does he sit? And four, how does he walk? So, these are very puzzling questions, but they're very deep. And basically, the first one has to do with what is the behavior You know, what, no, what are the symptoms? What are the symptoms of a person who is in transcendental consciousness? The second one, how does he speak, is it has to do with his understanding of things. You know, the most important feature to be able to recognize what kind of person is anyone is when the person speaks. And Prabhupada gives the example that you can have someone very well presented, you know, that is that he may have this credential or that credential, but when the person speaks, you can know what kind of person it is. You know, you can hide a fool with an external, you know, display. You can actually dress a fool like a, you know, like a king. But when the fool opens his mouth, then you can understand, you know, that this person is very unqualified. So how does he speak? How does he sit? Is what is the condition of his mind? What is the what is his mental strength? How what is his internal strength, his internal condition? Because if you sit, you know, and you see a person, you know, like twisting, you know, and, you know, all uncomfortable, you can see that the mind is not very comfortable, the body is not very comfortable. So the sitting can tell you very much a lot of the person. And how does he walk is how he functions, you know, and engages his senses in this material world. So Krishna answers. First question he answers in the text number 55. First question is, what are the symptoms? So he says, the Supreme Personality of God has said, O Partha, when a man give up all varieties of desires for sense gratification, which arises from mental concoction, and when his mind is thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So, similar theme that what this Python sage, it's not a Python sage, but the sage who is following, you know, this brata of being like a Python. That someone, that the person in transcendental consciousness is have to give up this plan. He have giving up the plan of trying to achieve happiness through sense gratification, because he can recognize that this have nothing to do with himself. It's just mental concoction. It's just in the mind. And then where did he find the satisfaction? What kind of plans he does? He have to do with the self alone. You know, it's within the self. So obviously, there's a lot of depth in that. And then, so those are the symptoms. Then, text 56 and 57, and the Bhagavad Gita, in this part, he answers the second question, Krishna. The second question is, how does he speak? What is his behavior, you know, like that? And then he says, 56, when a man is not disturbed in mind even amidst the threefolds of miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of a steady mind. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising it nor despising it, is firmly fixed in perfect knowledge. So the quality of a person who is sthita pragya and firmly fixed in perfect knowledge is that he is not affected by the miseries of this world. He is not affected by, like yesterday we discussed that, he is not affected by happiness, distress, by all these manifestations of the material world, of these dualities of happiness and distress like that. He can see for what it is. And so he's equipoise in all circumstances. And a person like that can speak transcendental knowledge. So you can understand that just when a person will speak and, you know, will speak with this type of knowledge of being equipoise in the midst of whatever, you know, manifestations of this material world, you know, this is a sage of a steady mind. And then the third question, how does he sit? Krishna answer in text number 58. One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects, as the tortoise draws its limbs within the shell, is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. So the example of the tortoise, that a person who can sit, whose mind is so steady that he can withdraw the senses, so not engage the senses, you know, when the circumstances call for, then is a sage of a steady mind. So meaning that if the person, you see them sitting in meditation, then, you know, the senses are withdrawn. And when the senses need to be used, then he comes. He use them. So like the tortoise, you know, you all have experienced a tortoise, that if the tortoise feels, you know, that there's some circumstance that is not favorable, then she goes completely into the shell. And then when the tortoise feels that, okay, no problem now, I can just move around, then you see the legs and the head comes out like that. And then how does he walk? That he answers from text 64 to 71. And basically, you know, just to keep it short, in that part, in those series of verses, Krishna explains that how this realized person engages his senses, act in the material world like that. And he does act in the material world for the satisfaction of Krishna. And that's the symptom, that's how he works. When he works, when he acts, is for the satisfaction of Krishna. So those are the things, you know, that that's what we can look up to understand the position of a person like this sage, and also to see how these personalities, they understand perfectly the material world, understand perfectly who they are as a spirit soul, understand perfectly who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and understand, you know, perfectly that the relationship with Krishna, with God. And so they act accordingly. In terms of ourself, how do we get free from this material world? Yesterday we read the answer that Krishna gave to Arjuna. How do you become free from the influence of the modes of nature? Then you engage in devotional service. And so many verses, nice verses, is given there in this regard, actually in this series of verses from the answer to the fourth question, 65, 265 is very famous. And let me see if I find it here. 265, let me look, give me a second. I can't remember the Sanskrit, but basically it's by devotional service, one is free from the threefold miseries. Hold on, 65, yes. For one does satisfy in Krishna consciousness the threefold miseries of the threefold miseries of material existing exist no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. So, by the process of devotional service, then these miseries, you know, they disappear. And especially, we hear that for us, the recommended method, the most powerful method and recommended method is the hearing and chanting of the holy names. You know, that the miseries of life that is compared to a great fire is completely extinguished. Cheto darpanam baba maha davar nirvapanam. This miserable condition that is like a burning fire is extinguished. This also in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam is explained that Shivanam Trayo, Shivanam Trayo, sorry. But the second verse of the first chapter, that it says that Dharma Prajita Kaita Votra, that this Srimad Bhagavatam only propounds the truth, what type of truth, this Param Dharma. The only thing that the Srimad Bhagavatam propounds is the truth, you know, of the supreme path of religion that basically completely annihilates the threefold miseries by just hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam constantly. When exposing oneself to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the three miseries will disappear. So that's the introduction of the Bhagavatam. So anyway, some things. Any comment or questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. You have some really nice points, especially about the video games. I'd like to comment on that, and maybe you can. I don't really have a formulated question, but maybe you could expand on it. Because it just reminds me when me and my brother was a kids, we had a video game for maybe like a week. Then our mom threw it away, and we were upset. So she prevented that, nipped it in the bud
nice
before.
Mother.
Huh?
Nice mother.
And so, a lot of times we think, you know, you were mentioning a nice point that while devotees were playing video games, I mean, in general, we think I'm a devotee, so I'll never act, you know, like the video game expresses, I'll never act in, you know, whatever. And this reminds me of one saying Buddha said, I really appreciate it. And it's also the exact same thing explained in Bhaktisiddhanta's article, Be Humbler Than a Blade of Grass. The saying basically says, let no man think lightly of evil, saying in his heart, it will not come upon me. Even by the falling of water drops, a water pot is filled. The fool becomes full of evil, even if he gather it little by little. So we can see, like, playing video games or watching movies, what are they doing in there? They're always acting in pride, envy, vengeance. And we learn from the Prabhupada's purports in the Bhagavatam that the common example that he gives is that we become like the person's places and things we associate. Like the example uses, an iron rod is metal, but when it associates with fire, it becomes fire. And so we can see that in the material world. And so my question is related to one thing I really appreciated, maybe you could expand on this point. In this regard, especially when associating with devotees, we usually take that tendency of playing video games or watching movies. We may not say that, but we take that same tendency of reacting in pride, envy, and vengeance with devotees. And like, for example, I'll just use one example from the sastras, like when the prostitute associated with Haridas Thakur. Now, if you ask the prostitute, what's your opinion of Haridas Thakur? She says, yes, he saved me. He's a very, you know, devoted person to God. Now, if you ask the same question to Ramachandra Khan, who was envious of Haridas, he'll say, oh, he's a charlatan. He's looking for his own recognition, etc. And then if you ask Haridas Thakur, Haridas, what's your opinion of the Muslims who beat you in 22 marketplaces? Haridas actually said, only saw the good. And actually, the Lord said that because you only saw the good in their hearts, my Shudan chakra couldn't, you know, slice their head off. And because you only saw the good in their heart. So when associating with devotees, I found that, you know, something I didn't like in myself, and I realized it was detrimental to my consciousness, is that when you have some type of spat or some friction with another devotee, then somebody asks you, oh, what do you think about this devotee? People may not criticize externally, but then they'll give a, you know, a bad face. You know, if you want to toss it on, whatever, stuff like that. And we don't realize that it's actually very detrimental to our Christian consciousness. The only reason I'm mentioning this, I haven't really formulated a question because it's already self-evident, but it's nice to mention these points repeatedly. Things that's very subtle, but it's actually very, it's like a spark, you know, a spark can turn an inferno. If we don't, you know, nip this consciousness in the bud, then it's very detrimental to our consciousness. So what are some steps we could do to keep reminding ourselves of this, these very subtle points of the mind? Because, you know, we may not criticize somebody externally, but then, you know, we give a bad-looking face or, you know, and we don't really consider it that big of a deal because we didn't say anything about anyone. So what are some steps we could do to keep these subtle points in mind? Because everything begins from the mind, the thoughts.
Yeah, the our process is, you know, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we, by Krishna's grace, by Guru and Krishna grace, we can understand that we come into a process of purification. So meaning that we're contaminated, that's why you enter in purification, you know. If you're not contaminated, you don't need to purify yourself. So we understand what we're coming in here. We have to purify, we have to reform many things in our being. So the process that we're given is the process of sadhana bhakti. So, you know, If we sort of thoughtful and keep reminding ourselves what is the purpose, you know, that I have this, I'm affected by all these things I was mentioning, you know, kama, lobha, you know, that all the things, kama, krodha, these things are there embedded. So I have to purify those things. So I'm following the process of sadhana bhakti. And if I'm following the process of sadhana bhakti, then I can expect that I'm going to be clean. It's like Prabhupada explains that, you know, you may be very dirty, but when you jump into the shower, there's a, you know, the process of cleaning yourself, you're doing the process of cleaning yourself. And it's expected that after, you know, you go through the whole bathing, then you're going to come out clean. But it is expected that while you enter the shower and you start the process of cleansing, then you're still going to be dirty. You know, there's a space of time that is going to be, you know, that it takes for the process of cleansing to happen. So it's natural. It's not unnatural that we experience ourselves and also some of our fellow devotees, that these things, you can see them manifest. But if we are introspective and we embrace, you know, the process of you know, of purification, then we can understand And we can also be very sympathetic and empathetic too, to what everybody is going through, because I'm introspective, so I know what I'm going through. So I see these things in myself. I see, you know, kama, krodha, lobha, you know, mad, all those six things. I see it in myself. I see them manifest in different ways. And, you know, and I'm making my best effort to try to eliminate them. So I know what it takes to, you know, when you are introspective, you know what it takes to, what kind of effort it takes and what kind of struggle. And then, you know, and you see those things, you feel bad, and, you know, you try to, you pray, you know, you ask for advice, you try it again, you fail, you go back again, and like that, you know, that means that you're in the process of cleansing yourself. You can see, first, when we become conscious, that's a very good symptom that, you know, the process is happening, that you become conscious that things are happening. You know, when I may have a cross of things that is so there that it almost, you know, becomes like, you know, that's your skin, but it's not. So when you start to scrub, you start to think, oh my God, there's something, you know, like coming out. And then you become conscious, this is not my skin, this is just a crust, you know, whatever, you know. And being conscious is a very positive symptom. And when that happens, then I also understand other devotees are going that through that too, you know. But I can appreciate that these are people who are going, and like me, going through the cleansing process, and I can be appreciating of that, you know. And really being in a community of devotees with whatever faults they may have, because they are doing, they're in the process of cleansing themselves, is even the devotee who may struggle the most is a much better association than anyone who's, you know, that is a non-devotee and who seems very balanced and this and that, you know. Being in the community of devotees is a blessing, even with, you know, whoever, you know, whatever difficulties devotees may go through. Because they're in the process. If they follow sincerely the process of purification. So that in itself will help us. Always remind us. Well, one thing is that really we have to be very introspective. We have to be introspective and always look at ourselves. You know, and if I feel offended by some action of a devotee, then, you know, I can see of myself, well, what am I getting offended? I'm supposed to be, you know, there's a quality that I'm supposed to try to, you know, have, which is, you know, of tolerance, equa poise, you know, like matar sparses tukunte ya type of quality. So why am I getting offended? Does it mean that, you know, and then you start to look inside. Oh, it's because I have this thought, you know, oh, you should recognize me or whatever, you know. So then you see, you know, I have some desire for this particular thing. So let me work on that. And then as far as a devotee is concerned, that is, you know, doing something that maybe is, you know, really, that's the devotee's also path, you know, and things like that. That's, but they, at least I appreciate it. Instead of looking, just like you said, Haridas Thakur, you know, that's example that we're looking up. Instead of looking at, you know, oh, you see this guy is like, you know, like that. I'm looking at this person is following the process of purification. What a wonderful thing. What an amazing thing. And, you know, actually, let me appreciate that. So, you know, appreciation rather than criticism is a very good thing. for us to cultivate. And I don't have to worry that, oh, Prabhu, you know, instead of, you know, trying to do this to me, why don't you appreciate me instead of criticizing me? No, you know, rather, you know, everybody has their own timing for everything. We have to concentrate on appreciating each other. Any other comment or question? Sarge, you're machinating. Yeah. Krishna Arch.
You know, you kindly described that the internal state and, you know, all those internal enemies that are existing there from, you know, reading those verses in Bhagavad Gita. So the sage is putting a lot of stress on the suffering that's coming, and that because of suffering, both that internal suffering, you know, you kindly explained the lust, anger, greed, then, you know, the gross, subtle suffering, and, you know, the suffering from nature. So all that suffering is actually minimizing the value of any success on the part of a person who's not chosen not to take that path of looking beyond just gratifying their senses. So it seems interesting to ask the question, how is it that a person who is taking the path of just gratifying their senses able to acknowledge the incredible mountain of suffering that's accompanying all that work at being successful on some material plane?
Because of delusion. Yeah, this moha, this delusion is that one have to fall into it. There's something have to be covered to be able not to see. And it's incredible. I mean, we all have the experience that, you know, when we come to Krishna consciousness, something that is so established as reality, as, you know, as the you know, real world, becomes like, wow, it's so obvious that this is doesn't make sense. It's so obvious. But, you know, for regular people, is a reality. But it's so obvious that have absolutely no sense, you know, to pursue certain things and to actually be able to rationalize, to keep going and going and going, pursuing something that it just doesn't pan out. And that's the power of the material world, that it just covers, you know, one's intelligence, one's common sense. And it's amazing because you see very materially qualified people, they're as bewildered and delusioned as, you know, even a simple, you know, just common person. So that's the power of the material world. And, you know, it's so powerful, this this material energy, that's why it's called Maya, you know, something that is not. Maya means, you know that it is an illusion. So to be able to function within an illusion, you really have to be, you know, sorry to say, you know, like covered by it. And so that's the nature of the material energy. So it's pretty scary, I think, you know, like that. And the worst thing is that because of our nature of being tatashta shakti, of marginal, you know, it takes, you know, a little, you have only two choices, like Prabhupada put it. You have to make a choice. So if you choose that, you're covered. So even for us, you know, who are in the process of purification, then if we stop the process, then immediately we're covered by this delusion. And then you see it sometimes, you know, you start to rationalize. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're like, you know, like taken by this current, and then you're way out there, you know, into the ocean. You know, pushed by some current in no time. So it's a very powerful thing. Prabhupada says that the only criticism that he have of his disciples, he say once, Prabhupada, that is that he says to his Western disciples that you are not sufficiently afraid of material energy. You sort of a little too casual with it. So it's big time. Stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.